Ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for tuning in to the Big Honker Podcast. Listen, everybody needs to stay caffeinated this time of year. Dirty Duck Coffee. It's the way we start our morning out here every single day with the Missouri Boat Ride Blend. It's a nice pecan flavor, pecan praline. Put it in my thermos with a little dash of peppermint mocha, white chocolate sometimes, you know.
It's like
I'm at Starbucks, Joe.
Get a little fruity on me. I love the Suns Up, Guns Up t-shirts and stuff. They got some cool swag. Check them out at dirtyduckcoffee.com.
Next, we are brought to you by Mr. Corey with Double T British Kennel.
Oh, great dogs.
Corey's got some great dogs out there right now. We ran them last year. Phenomenal dogs. They're great house dogs, great pets, but they also have a ton of drive in the field. So if you're looking for a puppy, a starter dog, finish dog, whatever you need, head over to britlabs.com. Contact Corey over there. Even if you just have a question, you know, something, maybe you're doing your own thing and you need some advice from a professional, Corey's always willing to lend a helping hand.
So. A very good person, great dogs, highly recommend britlabs.com. That's Double T British Kennels.
Next, we're brought to you by Ducks Unlimited. They just finished their Into the Vault sale. They crushed all the records. More money for conservation and wetland habitat. Listen, get involved somehow. Start a chapter, join a chapter, whatever you've got to do. Ducks Unlimited, put your dollars to work, and they're the leader in wetland conservation for a reason. They're great people. We had Jimbo Robinson out here, phenomenal guy. David Schuessler, great, great people, and they do a lot of work on behalf of waterfowl hunters from Texas up into Canada. They've always got our best interests at heart. So
they've got a new thing. Support them. Right now, make a year-end donation to Ducks Unlimited and choose your gift. So check them out at ducks.org.
Next, we're brought to you by Lucky Duck. I have ran the new spinner, the one that's got the black and white wings. And it makes a big difference because ducks can see that black and white flash, like Jeff's been saying for years on this podcast. They can see it better. So we've been doing those. We've had a couple of duck hunts that have gone really, really well. They've got a new rotary out that we've ran a couple times, had some success. They've got kennels that are 5-star crash test rated, so you can feel confident whenever you put your four-legged hunting buddy in the back of your pickup truck in a kennel. If something bad were to happen, they're protected.
Extend your hunting season. Everybody, whenever the waterfowl season's over, go out there and get you a Lucky Duck varmint call and start shooting them coons. Help the turkeys out. Help the quail population out. Shoot the coons.
And that's at luckyduck.com. You can get whatever you need. The new spinner, A-frames, they got a lot of cool stuff for 2023, 2024. So check them out, luckyduck.com. We're also brought to you by Boss Shot Shell. Bismuth is the way to go. Get that lead out of here, and it's a lot better than steel.
And if you want some Boss swag, you need to call the shop, and you can order it direct from them at the shop. And that's at bossshotshells.com. Also, get ready to stock up. Got turkey loads coming. Get the Boss Tom. Turkey season, believe it or not, is only 4 months away.
It's not very far away. I am in love with the War Chief. I mean, it is hard hitting. There a lot of research and development went into this shotgun shell, and it makes a difference out in the field. So, also, we're brought to you by Pacific Calls. You can use our promo code BHP25. Will save you 25% at checkout. That is site wide. Whatever you want, whether you're getting honker calls, spec calls, duck calls, turkey calls. Whatever you're getting, swag, it still applies. 25% off. There's nobody else out there that is going to give you 25% off. I mean, it's a steal, and everybody needs to take advantage of it. PacificCustomCalls.com. You can fill up your shopping cart. Use the promo code at the very end, BHP25, 25% off. They are great guys. You can always get a hold of them if you have any issues. Use the promo code BHP25. We would love to see your lanyard full of Pacific Calls. Next, we are brought to you by Dive Bomb Industries. The hunting has turned here, so I am now running some of the fully flocked specs. And got to tell you, first couple of times, made a difference. Birds were actively trying to get to the fully flocked decoys. I'm a fan. I know what I'm ordering next year. More fully flocked decoys. DiveBombIndustries.com. They're great people over there, and they have been with us since basically the beginning of this show. So head over there.
Good people. Go check it out. Cody Stokes, Asher Tolliver, done a great job. DiveBombIndustries.com.
Next, we're brought to you by Mossberg, the Pro Waterfowl 940. Gun of choice around here at Stanford Hunting Outfitters. It handles the fine sand that we have out here. It plays fits on a lot of guns, but not the Mossberg 940. It's a great gun. Even Maddie shoots it. Maddie Robertson. I mean, how could you not trust him?
I've been shooting the 20 gauge over under and the 28 gauge over under. Great right. guns. Great product. That's Mossberg.com. Check them out. And you can buy them at almost all retail outlets. I'll have Mossberg guns.
Put it to your shoulder. Take it for a test drive. You'll love it. Next, the product of the year. It has changed my dog. Hemp Hill Farm, CBD. Lou will fail a drug test, but he is pain and ache free. He calms down sooner in the morning. He's always had a little bit of an issue with whining. And I'm telling you what, after one or two retrieves, he's hitting his stride. And I also notice whenever he wakes up in the morning, he's not stiff and achy. I give him the recommended dose of CBD before we go out every single morning. And I'm a fan. I really am. They've got roll-on. So that's just for pets. They have a specific pet blend. They also have stuff for humans. They have gummies. They have roll-ons. They have salves. Phenomenal products. If you have the ouchies or something's, you know, got a little lingering issue, head over to Hemp Hill Farm, farm with a PH, .com. And they also have a promo code. BHP saved you 20%, I believe.
And 30% off your very first order today. If you sign up for the Recovery Relief Rest, they get 30% off. I take two of the gummies every night. Well, I take about one to two. Sometimes I take one and a half, sometimes I take one or two. It knocks me out. I go to bed and I get about 6 to 7 hours of solid rest, and I wake up and I'm not sluggish. Doesn't give you the after effects of like taking a Benadryl or a Tylenol PM. It's better for you, and it's Hemp Hill Farm. That's HEMPHILLPHARM.com. Check it out, hemphillfarm.com.
Jeff's a fan. Next, we're brought to you by the Looking Glass Podcast. Head over to their Patreon. Logan and Rebel will be out here next month. They're great guys. Hilarious. All their episodes are 2 hours plus, so it's great for those long road trips. They're a lot of fun to listen to, and they're incredible guys. Really, really fun people to be around. Just go to Patreon, type in the Looking Glass Podcast. It'll all pop up, and then you can do what you need to do. Send over a little bit of money, and you'll have their entire library at your disposal.
Yes, shingear.com. I wear the shin boots. I'm wearing the scout boots right now. I have worn them for 3 months straight, basically. I wear them every day. I wore them in Boston. I wore them in the airport. They're comfortable, just like wearing a set of Nikes without all the politically correctness. At shingear.com. Also brought to you by MLR Graphics in Breckenridge, Texas. It's time for softball season. It's right around the corner, believe it or not. Little League Baseball. If you need your kids to get the best jerseys and equipment you can have, MLR Graphics in Breckenridge, Texas can take care of you. They do all of our shirts, hoodies, caps, everything here. They can take care of you. If you want to outfit your company, whatever you want to do, hats, t-shirts, caps, jackets, the whole thing, it's MLRGraphics.com.
Also, we're brought to you by Alpha Outdoor Specialties, maker of the Stanfield Stool and the Blind Caddy. It has saved my back. The Stanfield Stool has... sitting it every single morning, and it is a dream. We run the Lucky Duck 2x4 blind, so we have four chairs per blind. They are extremely comfortable. So if you want to kick it up a notch in your A-frame or just your regular blind, I suggest you head over to alphaoutdoorspecialties.com, look at the Stanfield Stool, and if you want to stay organized in the blind, get the Blind Caddy. Alpha Outdoor Specialties. Last but not least, we're brought to you by Stanfield Hunting Outfitters. We got a couple dates in January, but not very many. You better get on the horn right now. 940-658-3172. Jeff will answer the call. He'll call you back if he doesn't answer. Send an email, goose@westtex.net. Get some dates.
Nebraska. The last week in Nebraska is duck season. I've got some dates left. If you want to go shoot some birds on the Platte River, holler at me. That's like I said, Andy said, that's stanfieldhunting.com. Or 940-658-3172, and I do answer my own phone.
Thank you so much for being a part of this. It has been another record-setting couple of months. We couldn't do it without you.
God bless you.
Ladies and gentlemen, this episode of the podcast, we are joined by Andrew Beam from Beam Country Music. He is an up-and-coming country music artist. He's out of South Carolina right now. Great guy. He's out there cutting his teeth on the road, doing whatever it takes to be a country music star. He's a former game warden in South Carolina, and talk a little bit about his past career and his goals and dreams moving forward. So a lot of fun talking to him. Sounds like a great guy. Go check out his music, Andrew Beam. It's on Spotify, Apple Music, all platforms. Wherever you listen to music, it's there. So go check him out. Cool guy. He's going to be at Seawee the week that we're at Turkey in Nashville. He'll be at Seawee. So if you're going to that show, he'll be there. Go shake his hand, listen to his music, buy him a beer, whatever. Here he is, Andrew Beam. Go check his music out.
Welcome to the Big Honker Podcast, brought to you by Dive Bomb Industries. I'm Jeff Stanfield with the world famous Andy Shaver.
Fully flocked specs. That's all I got to say. Fully flocked.
All I got to say is I'm never going to Texas Roadhouse again.
That didn't take you long.
No, that was you knew I was going to talk about it. The worst service I've ever had in my entire life for a mediocre piece of shit steak.
Never even got the piece of shit steak.
So, background, me and Andy, our families, we met. Dylan, our granddaughter, had a basketball game in Abilene. We went last night. And when we left, we were going to go eat at a Thai place.
Yep.
Nah, so excited.
Which was going to be interesting for me on my carnivore diet. But right. Go ahead.
But anyways, we was going to go there to eat. They're on vacation until January 29th. I guess the Thai business is really good that you can take a 3 or 4 week vacation and be away from your business. So then I decided that I would be nice and go to a place that I cannot stand to go to. And so I said, we'll go to Texas Roadhouse so Andy on his carnivore diet can have a steak.
Yep.
We waited an hour and 10 freaking minutes to have some limp-wristed little waiter that had an attitude get all pissy and wouldn't even wait on us. And finally, we got up and freaking left. And then when we left, they told us, sir, it'll only be 15 or 20 minutes. Who the hell is going to wait an hour and a half to eat a freaking steak at Texas Roadhouse?
That's right. And I couldn't even have, if I was drinking beer, it might make it more palatable, but.
The beer wasn't even good.
I was drinking water.
I ordered a beer with some tomato juice. He brung me fucking Kalmata juice. I do not want Bloody Mary mix. I want tomato juice, never Red Draw. Anyways, so again, for the record.
I'm glad you got that off your chest.
I will never go to Texas Roadhouse again. I told him, Michelle. You do. No, I bet I don't.
I'll bet you.
No, I don't. I hate that place anyways. Other than the rolls, it ain't worth the shit.
I didn't even get to have those.
Well, I didn't either. Okay, with us today from South Carolina, a Clemson grad, a former game warden, and a duck hunter, and a country music artist, Mr. Andrew Beam. How you doing, Andrew?
Good morning. Doing good. How y'all doing out there in Texas?
We're doing good, other than Jeff getting his blood pressure up over Texas Roadhouse. Where do you fall on Texas Roadhouse? I feel like it's always going to be a 6 or a 7, except for last night. Last night was an anomaly, I feel like.
Do they still have peanuts on the floor? You can throw the shells on the floor.
That's Logan's Roadhouse, I think.
You can do it at both.
Is it both? Is it Texas? Okay.
I don't know.
Well, them fuckers didn't give us no peanuts either, jackasses.
It might just be Logan's.
We didn't get no peanuts.
Then I'm out on them. Yeah, back in the day, there's not one down here in the low country that I know of. I went to high school in Anderson, South Carolina, and there's a Texas Roadhouse there. They used to have peanuts you could throw on the floor, but I think a lot of these peanut allergy kids have kind of ruined that for a lot of people.
Plus, I didn't even think about that. Yeah.
So if that's, I have to side with Jeff on this one. I'm out.
Bingo.
On Texas Roadhouse.
I would never go to the damn place again. Was I wrong, Andy?
No, you were not wrong. I've got your back.
Okay, well, I appreciate that. Because mom's like, Andy's so embarrassed at you. She kept telling me that the whole way home. I go, he didn't say nothing. She goes, well, he was embarrassed for you. I said, why? I said, did you think the waiter was out of town? Oh, we would have left 30 minutes ago if it had been just me and you. Okay, then what's the difference then? I don't understand the peanut allergy deal. And I'm not being insensitive to kids that have peanut allergies. I just don't understand where all of a sudden 30 years ago, we didn't hardly have any peanut allergies. Now half the freaking world can't eat a fucking peanut. I don't get that either.
That's because our response has been wrong.
How should we respond to the peanuts?
We shouldn't have cut them out. We should have, the people that have a problem should be slowly introduced into peanuts rather than cutting it out. Because now all that's going to do is make it worse because nobody's going to, if you have a problem, you're not going to, it's basically like COVID. You're not going to have any herd immunity, basically. So our response has been wrong. We should have people that have a peanut allergy, we have to slowly introduce them into peanuts to where they build up a tolerance. Rather, now it's just a hard line. Nobody gets peanuts or peanut butter, and that's just going to exacerbate our problem.
What's Nick's fucking water? But it's just crazy that something that I'm 55 years old. I'm old, but I'm not freaking, you know, 97. But I'm 55, and in my lifetime, I grew up with very – I don't even remember a kid being allergic to shit. Matter of fact, we had a tornado that hit in Wichita Falls when I was in fifth grade, and it wiped out like nine schools. The elementary I went to, it took part of the roof off of the cafeteria. So for lunch every day, this is not – now, I grew up poor, and so I think they fed the poor kids different than they did the rich kids. We got peanut butter and syrup freaking sandwiches and apple slices for lunch every day. They weren't worried about peanuts then. I'm sure the rich kids were getting ham sandwiches, but we got the poor side of town. We got freaking peanut butter and syrup sandwiches. So
I'm just glad I don't have a peanut allergy. But yeah, I'm with you, man. I feel like I remember one kid growing up that was like that. Of course, I'm from a small mountain town, North Carolina, but my fiance's actually got a peanut allergy. But hers is kind of like you're talking about, Andy. Like the more she seemingly anyway, in small doses, seems to get better.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's just like anything. But like when you just cut it out, it's just going to make your problem worse.
Now, Andrew, you were a game warden for a while, right?
I was.
Where were you a game warden at, in South Carolina?
I was in Charleston, South Carolina.
Oh, beautiful place.
And I never had any aspirations of being a country music singer for a living. That kind of developed. But, yeah, I mean, I loved being a game warden. Just didn't pay enough. And I've always played guitar. Basically started doing that to make supplemental income and playing around town, having a good time, and started pulling people over. And they're like, man, you're that guy that plays real country. And eventually kind of like, well, I can't sleep at night because I have this calling to go hit the road, chase that neon rainbow. And here we are. But yeah, I was in Charleston, South Carolina, but I don't know why they sent the mountain boy from North Carolina to the coast, but it worked out well.
What's the craziest shit you've seen?
Everybody asked that, and I'm sure any game warden can attest to this. Every day is different. You see something crazy just about every day. Craziest thing I've seen, honestly, you can't even come up with really one because there are so many different stories. The first thing that comes to my mind on just some different stories we've had that I'll keep it related to music, I guess. We had, and you can't make this up, there is a billfish tournament here in South Carolina called the South Carolina Governor's Cup. And I went there and played guitar for that captain's meeting, was on call a couple of days later, had actually played acoustically on the back of a boat and was on call. So didn't drink or anything, went back to the house, got called back there about an hour and a half later. And unbeknownst to myself and everybody on the dock at the time, some guys had come in from offshore on a commercial fishing boat, had stolen a Boston Whaler, were hammered drunk, came to the marina I was at, got kicked out of every single bar there. And when they went to leave, there were three of them. They went to leave, and when they threw the bow line off the front of that Boston Whaler, it got caught in the prop. And the current rips through that particular marina. They hit the dock, and when the guy went, there was a Samoan guy in the boat. When he went to look over the side to see what was going on, it capsized the whole boat. One of the guys ended up drowning. But I got called back to the same spot that I played at like an hour and a half earlier.
Could have just stayed there. Kept your uniform. Easy.
I showed back up there and I had a Ranger flats boat at the time with a 225 Optimax. And not only was it the same dock, but literally when I was standing on the catwalk to the left was where I'd played on the back of the Sport Fisher. Had never met the particular owner or anybody on that boat until that night. That was to the left, and the slip directly across from it was where this boat had capsized, and that was to the right. And it's people walking up the dock like, man, were you not just on? I was like, whoa, I wasn't even here. Don't even worry about that. Because at the time, I was freaking out, man. You know, I'm going to get in trouble. I'm fired. But no, so it was – I looked at that point. That's probably the craziest thing that's happened to me from a standpoint of
right,
both jobs coming
right?
together, obviously, the game warden.
What's
world's colliding?
Say it again. For sure. So I was like, I can take this path or take this path. I ended up locking that guy, feeling he'd be fine. He's still probably in prison right now. So, yeah, pretty crazy. But every day, man, I mean, you name it, boat fires, wrestling alligators.
What's the biggest outlaw you ever had to deal with? I know you can't mention names, but tell us.
Drunk Samoan.
Well, besides that, tell me, what's the biggest egregious act you ever seen as a game warden?
I busted two defense attorneys for hunting turkey season, or hunting turkey one day out really? Of season.
What did he say? What was his, like, what was his defense?
Doesn't sound.
Just didn't see when it went out?
He said, no, he said he shouldn't have done it. He was a day early. It came out on Sunday. Okay. It was Saturday.
That's kind of a screwy way of doing it, though. Our Texas, and it always opens on Saturday.
Yeah, they keep switching it up here. That's not necessarily an egregious act, but it was kind of crazy because I didn't know they were defense attorneys really? Until I was signing the paperwork for them.
He didn't get off, though?
Yeah, which is... Yeah,
did he represent himself kind of or did he just plead guilty?
He was dead. He pled guilty because I... So, basically, this was my rookie year on, and I was game one for only 3.5 years, but I've only been doing guitar for 5, so it really wasn't... doesn't seem like it's that long ago, but my rookie year on... I didn't set an alarm on this particular Friday night. I woke up and something told me. And I woke up early. I was like, man, get in your truck and ride around. So that was one thing, being a DNR officer, it was a lot of fun, is that, especially not being from Charleston, I didn't know whose property was what. I would just go look for turkey bait. So this was, there's a 10-day rule on bait. I'm not sure what it's like in Texas, but you have to prove that bait was there within 10 days of somebody hunting it. So basically, I've been all over the county looking for different areas to go look at, see if anybody was breaking the law on that end of things. There was a gate open that morning, and I was like, that gate hadn't been open for like a month. And keep in mind, this is one day before season. I pull in there. There's an F-150 parked at a chain gate with Bojangles on the console, and they had 2 hunting mustard wrappers open. So I said, all right, well, there's 2 guys automatically. You could tell where they were sitting, and they just left their stuff right there on the console. There was a gun case, so this looks pretty good. And I was like, man, maybe, who knows? Because my initial thoughts, getting in the mindset of the outlaw, they're going to tell me they're coyote hunting or hog hunting or whatever. So I repositioned my truck to where it would be more difficult for them to get out. And again, I don't do this anymore, so I don't have to be as careful about how I say about tactics. But hop the gate, start walking in. Well, they heard me move my truck, so they were coming out with no gun. Mm-hmm. So I just played it cool. It was like, good morning, fellas, what's going on? And they end up acting like everything's fine, you know, and I said, where's your gun at? And you could tell immediately, he's like, oh, man. He says, around the corner. And I was like, around the corner, huh? He said, yep. I said, well, why do you have, you know, why are you carrying a shotgun with you anyway, one day out of season? He said, man, maybe for coyotes or something. I said, okay, I hear you. Of course, you know, keep in mind, they got turkey vest on, all decked out. Come around the corner, and it's all covered up in leaves, everything. I mean, you could tell where he tried to completely hide this. And I asked him, I said, is it loaded? He kind of looked at me and laughed, said, yeah, it is. And I said, do me a favor and unload it. He wrapped the shell out. I said, let me guess, 3.5-inch Winchester number 5. He was like, man, you got me. And there ended up being a corn feeder on the property. They didn't know if it had any corn or not. It actually didn't, so they got lucky on that one. But came back out, and as I was writing the tickets, I said, man, look, only one of y'all has a gun, and I'm going to ride both of y'all. If you come to court, I'll take care of your buddy. Sure enough, he came in there, man, nicest guy ever. So that was kind of a cool, I would say, as your first year on as a game warden, that was a good case to make. But the fact that it was 2 defense attorneys just sealed the deal on that one for me.
So
and the next day ended up busting somebody for bait. So, but man, it's, yeah, good.
How can you prove that the bait was put out 10 days before you hunted it? How can you prove that if there's no, like, trail cameras or anything? Like, say nothing's eating it.
It's not.
And it's just there. You know what I mean?
It's not that it's put out necessarily 10 days. It's the fact that it's viable for 10 days. So it doesn't matter if you dump it in. I mean, it has to be, it can't be like black and molded corn or whatever you're looking at. But for the example's sake, like, you have to walk in and document it, basically. So if you can prove, like, if you put something out 20 days in advance, if nothing eats it and it's still sitting there, when somebody documents that it is still viable, then that's where you're, the law states that there can't be bait in the
okay.
area.
Okay. So the bait has to be removed 10 days before you hunt it, basically. Am I understanding right?
Every grain, kernel, whatever you're baiting with, it all has to be gone by then.
Okay. That's the same as the ducks, I think.
can bait as long as it's been gone for a certain amount of time.
I think if you hunt, if someone baits a pond or something, like you bait a pond, and I think you got to wait till every kernel's gone, and 10 days after there's no food left, then you can hunt. I think so, or 14 days. We don't bait nothing like that, so I don't know. But here in Texas, you can hunt over corn to shoot turkeys.
Yeah. You can hunt over anything Any, I mean, you know, deer, pigs, turkey, anything like that, right. You can hunt over bait here in Texas.
Everything unless it's migratory.
Right.
I found that out back in September. So I teal hunt down in Winnie, Texas, okay. at Pipkin Ranch. Uh-huh. And so somebody asked me about that. And I said, yeah, man, I busted plenty of people over turkey bait. And they all kind of looked at me puzzled. And they're like, turkey bait? What is that? So did I mention I love Texas too, man, by the way? If I could convince my fiance to move out that way, I would be there tomorrow.
It's a great.
But, man, back to the whole most egregious things we've seen. So being a coastal DNR officer, we worked everything from hunting, fishing like anybody else would in the state of South Carolina to offshore recreational and commercial fisheries. So shrimp trawlers, people picking oysters on top of people recreational fishing for red snapper, anything like that. So we pretty much had two or three times as much on our hands as most game wardens right. in the state. But man, in all that, you name it, I've seen it. 100 undersized crabs. I mean, just plethoras of undersized fish, oversized. The lengths people go to hide stuff just blows my mind. And generally, they're already caught before you ever approach them. They just don't realize it, and they usually hang themselves. So as far as, you know, them divulging what they've done, they just don't realize it. So,
what amazes me, I was a judge here for 15 years in a small town, and I've seen the same people over and over again. But the game wardens I know from other places, they deal with the same outlaws all the freaking time. And it's like, how many fines do you have to get before you realize, you know, because most game violation guys are not one and done. They're multiple of events all the time. Something's happening. It just blows my mind how they just can't get that out of their blood to not be a poacher.
I'll agree with that. And I saw two types of those. So you're right. You got those who I think do it for the sport factor or their rush factor. We had a guy, he was actually hunting a public area for deer. And what kills me is in hindsight, I had him dead to rights and I should have gone with gut feeling. I mean, that's a real thing, going with your gut. I checked this area the day after deer season had gotten out, and here this guy, I was like, this is kind of strange. It was right after dark. There was still, it was a panel van that was parked there. And so I called another officer and I said, man, something's up with this. This guy shouldn't be hunting this area. And here he comes out with his bow, tree stand, everything. And I was like, oh yeah. And I was like, hey man, any luck? Cause you want to ask the questions that like there's nothing wrong. I know a lot of my outlaw buddies are getting infuriated when I talk about that, but I mean, that's just doing, you know, they game wardens got a job to do, man. And a lot of them are really good at that. But I said, you do any good? He said, no man, I was just getting my stand down. And I said, well, you do realize it's closed for deer hunting. He said, no man, I'm squirrel hunting. And I'm a big bow hunter. So I was like, all right, I'm going to see where this goes. And sure enough, he had all the judo points and bludgeon tips on his arrows. And I was like, well, I guess I really can't fault him for that. Cause if I had a dime for every time I wanted to sling an arrow out of a tree at a squirrel, I get it. So the next season, we ended up busting that guy for night hunting deer with a crossbow two different times. And the judge ended up actually like banning him from that property for life.
Wow.
But if one wasn't bad enough, like he literally, when I tell you he had an entire like workstation set up in this tree, he had different, like, you know, the external USB chargers you can plug into. He had all those set up so he could recharge his lights. He was hunting all night and he was in a company vehicle.
Oh my goodness.
So same panel van. And then, you're right, man, repeat offender. Like I knew that guy was up to no good. And dang if we didn't catch him 8 months later in the same spot, actually night hunting, and then caught him another month and a half after that doing the exact same thing. But then the other, I would say, category of offender that I saw was on the fishery side. There was one guy in particular, we called him Blondie. I could probably remember his real name, but he would catch, and he was a great trout fisherman. He would catch huge gator trout here and sell them. And that was his source of income. And man, he didn't care. The only thing he cared about is that, so in South Carolina, you have three saltwater violations before it points you out. So they're like, you lose your privileges for the year hunting and fishing. So this guy knew that, but man, when I tell you, he had lookouts all over the place. His brother would stay on lookout and call to let him know we were coming. But we eventually did get him off the water, but you're right though, man. It's I think some people do it for the rush of it. Some people do it for the financial gain.
Yeah. How do you catch the guy at night? You just wait for his lights to kind of shine to light up or what?
We had a FLIR thermal unit.
Oh, okay. Can you pig hunt there at night?
In South Carolina, yes. In a lot of these WMA areas, they all have different rules. We only have this one little one in my unit, so I don't want to misspeak the rest of them in the state. Generally, pig hunting, you have to use whatever's in seat, like whatever firearm is legal for that season. So deer season just went out here, so like you wouldn't be able to go out there with a 30-06 right now and kill a
really?
Pig. Right. Most of the time, there's stipulations, even honestly, from a safety aspect, regulating public woods, but on private, absolutely.
Right. Yeah, that makes sense. That's interesting that you can't use a rifle now that deer season's out for anything. Because there's no rules here for pigs. Like, you know, there's people shooting them out of helicopters. You know, people are baiting them with Tannerite and all this other stuff. So I didn't know how it was there in South Carolina.
I'm sure they're a nuisance animal just like they are everywhere, too.
Oh, 100%. I cannot stand a pig. Absolutely.
Now, y'all have some things in South Carolina that we don't have a lot of here that we have sometimes. Do y'all deal with the swans like they have in North Carolina, or is that too far north for y'all?
So I'm from North Carolina originally, and actually how I found out about y'all was through a buddy of mine that guides up there in Swan Quarter. His name is Miles Galloway. And I killed a swan with him 2 years ago now. And the way they deal with North Carolina is obviously a lottery. In South Carolina, we do not have that at all. You cannot kill swans at all. And you don't, I mean, you see them, don't get me wrong. Like, actually, where I record is in Bennett's Point, South Carolina. So about 2 hours south of where I live right now. And there is a big WMA area called Bear Island. And there's swans everywhere there, but completely out of season in South Carolina.
That's crazy. So how far are you away from North Carolina? Like, where's the border at from where you live?
From where I live, probably about an hour and 45 minutes.
So you can go there and shoot all the swans you want hour 45 south of there, and it's no go.
No, it's strict in North Carolina. It's a lottery. So you have to apply as usually you get preference points. So I think 5 people is the maximum hunting party, if I recall right, is how we did it. And it's one per season, and they're super strict on their tagging.
Is it like a once in a lifetime deal, like for an out of stater? Like, will you just get one swan tag for North Carolina in your entire life, or is there a possibility where if you reapply every year, you could go out and shoot one every year if you're lucky enough to get drawn?
To my knowledge, you can get more. We got lucky, and we got it the first go around.
How many of you went out?
We had 5 people from Wabala, South Carolina, that went up there, and hey, we killed them the first afternoon we showed
really?
Up.
Really, all 5 tagged out.
Oh yeah, 5 tagged out, and our buddy Miles, he couldn't make it that night, so his brother Bauer, who's now a guide in Idaho right now, if I'm not mistaken, he was out there and literally just put Dollar General white trash bags on dowel rods with a blind, and he said, man, just give it 30 minutes. There's pretty much this golden hour for swans, and dang, if he wasn't right, I'm almost down to the minute, and there for an hour, it was all you could see and hear was swans.
Really?
And so we tagged out right there. Yeah, you got to be obviously careful, make sure you don't shoot more than one, and generally take turns, but we had one, and have y'all shot swans?
Never, never, no. It's new to me.
Whatever you think as far as the size of the bird goes, probably double.
Really?
It is insane, and we had a couple that were headshots that fell right there, but a lot of them will be body shot and kind of sail off and fall right there and be dead, but we had one that was crypt up. Bauer rolls out there, man. We're watching this from the blind, and he had extra tufts on, and he takes a running start. This thing stands up on him. He drop kicks this joker and ends up grabbing a hold of it, comes back in, and it latches onto his arm. Oh. He's like, man, somebody please bring me a gun. So they're pretty terrifying, to be honest, when they stand up on you like that. But it was crazy. And I was going to mount mine, but a lot of the taxidermists down here don't want to mess with them just because I'm sure it's a pain in the butt as a taxidermist, but it also costs a whole lot of money. So we actually, I don't know if it's the best table fare all the way around. A lot of people don't do that, but I'm a huge proponent. I eat what I kill. So it's probably like the best beef jerky you've ever had.
It's the best pastrami I ever had was swan.
Yeah.
We had swan pastrami last year, and it was absolutely amazing.
Yeah, we went fishing in Venice, and we had Chef Jean-Paul with us, and he had some swan pastrami, and it was incredible.
It was very good. I would. Would you be interested, Andy, if we did our TV show and we went and shot a swan?
Yeah, that'd be fun.
I think it'd be an interesting, something different to do. I don't know. You shoot one bird. Do they shoot anything else while you're swan hunting, or is it just swans and that's it?
Well, where we were at was all swans, but I mean, if you are duck hunting in that area and a swan flies over, you have a swan tag, you can shoot it.
But well, what I'm saying is, if we come to do a 3-day hunt somewhere to swan hunt for a TV show, is there something to do? Because you shoot your swan your first day, you're done. It's a long way to go to shoot one bird and not do nothing else, is what I was asking, what I'm meaning.
Gotcha. Yeah, there's ducks. So that's actually where I mean, it depends on where you go. Obviously, just like anywhere else, you have clubs there that have impoundments that are, this year they were great. I mean, probably some of the best hunting I've heard about in the country, because y'all all know how this season has gone. So yes, there are plenty of ducks around there, but most of them are in the impoundments. But I mean, not saying that, you know, couldn't get a hookup on that too.
That is crazy though, that you just said that you're in the Carolinas and y'all have had a tough season. We've had out of 1 to 10, we've had a season of about a 7 to 8. We've had a pretty good year. We've had some days that have been bad days, but overall our season's been pretty good season so far. But man, I've talked to a lot of people that have really, really, really struggled. Now, our November was outstanding, and the first 2 weeks of December were really, really good. And then it got hard because we just never had no winter. And now ducks have saved us the last couple of weeks. We've had some tremendous duck shoots. We've killed a lot of widgeons. So, but it's crazy, from South Carolina to us, I've talked to guys on the West Coast. Everybody's in the same boat. We've just had that flat weather, and now it's colder than shit. I mean, there's people having blizzards in Kansas City right now. I think it's terrible.
Yeah.
So it's just been a crazy year. Do you shoot black ducks where you're at?
You can here. There's a lot more mottled ducks where I'm at than black ducks. Now up there where I was just talking about in Swan Quarter, Hyde County, North Carolina, there are a bunch of black ducks.
There you go.
And I hunted there. I had a couple of shows that were routed that direction. It's just very lucky. And I have a buddy of mine from down in South Carolina that's a member in Hyde County, North Carolina. And I went straight from the shows to duck camp there. And this was back in November, so around Thanksgiving time. And we had a great time, man, all decoying birds. But I think throughout the season, they limited every hunt they went up there. But you come down, that's about 6 hours, 5.5 hours north of me. But you come down here, and early season, like you're talking about, was good. And then it seems to have slowed down. But I'm hoping this weather push up there is going to bring more birds here, because we're shooting Friday this coming week.
So let me ask you this. Had you not been stationed in Charleston, do you think that you would have pursued the music career? Because, I mean, that's kind of, you know, you got live bands, you got a lot of bars that you can kind of hit up at night. Do you think that if you would have been stationed anywhere else that didn't really have that nightlife, that you would have been able to cross over?
I think I'd still be a game warden if I wasn't in Charleston, 100%. And the reason I say that is not necessarily because Charleston does have a going out nightlife, don't get me wrong, but it's not a music scene by any means. It's a cover band scene or a party band scene, anything. But the difference was definitely the nature of the DNR job itself. So when I applied, I was actually a park ranger in Augusta, Georgia for the federal side of things. And I had that job all through college as a co-op. And I thought that I was going to be in the upstate of South Carolina being a game warden. And they had an opening in South Carolina. Man, I was gung-ho and 22 years old, and I wanted to get after it. And so I took it. And I don't regret it by any means, but I think that anywhere else in the state, you can probably make it off of a game warden salary and have the time to be able to take up a secondary source of income. And they've gotten better about it since I left in 2000. I left in May of 18, and they've had a couple different raises, but that was honestly how I kind of stumbled into accidentally becoming a countrypreneur, if you will, at this point, was literally playing for fun. And then it became to where if I did not have a show, then I wasn't able to make ends meet. And I didn't have a lot of overhead at the time as far as truck payments go or a mortgage or any of that. And it just, like I said, when I started pulling people over and they were like, dude, you're that guy that plays real country, that said something to me. And I remember I saw Cody Jinks in Charleston Music Hall in 2017, and I looked at my now fiance and I was like, I can do this.
Mm-hmm.
And I could tell she's like, you've lost your mind. And so later that, obviously less than a year later, I went for it. And but no, absolutely. I love being a game warden. I still keep up with those guys, and all I do is hunt, fish, play golf, and play country music. But I think things would have definitely been different had I not been sent to Charleston.
Let's talk country music for a minute. Who is your favorite country artist other than yourself?
Of all time? probably Waylon Jennings, man, as far as
good old West Texas boy.
But I would say, oh yeah, yeah, yeah. Like I said, I like Texas a lot, man. Me and Texas get along.
Have you, I've recently been introduced to Steven Wilson Jr., and I think that's probably the podcast that you were listening to. I love that guy.
It was.
That year to be young, 1994, great song. And he's got a unique voice, kind of got like an old school voice. Really like him right now.
That's your man, huh? That's your jam.
I found out about him. I was in Nashville back in probably June, and one of my buddies, Mitch Wallace, who does a lot of media in Nashville, he shoots for Kane Brown, and he's on the road with Trey Lewis a lot. And he just got into duck hunting himself. Actually, I met him on the duck camp tour about this time last year. He's actually the one that introduced me to him. And I was like, who? And he showed him to me. So I've been listening to him since. But it seems like since then, and maybe it's just because like you were talking about, your buddy was telling you about it and the algorithm picked it up. But it seems like then he's definitely, which is great, man. I mean, that's, I applaud everybody's success. I think that's so cool to watch somebody that's been doing it for a long time to all of a sudden get that spark.
Yeah, because I guess the way that I understand it is Spotify featured him on like a featured that song on one of like their landing platforms, and then that's just kind of where the spark happened, and it's been all upward since then. But it's just anything. I mean, you know, you get one person to listen to your song, and then the algorithm picks up that they listen to it, and then they start showing more of your stuff, and it's just a wacky way of kind of doing business now. You know what I mean? Like even music's that way.
Music is, I don't think anybody really has the answer to it. And I certainly have not found I'm not afraid of the algorithm and vice versa, man. I feel like our stuff is so shadow banned. I mean, I make a living 100% playing music, and I put 98,000 miles on my Chevrolet in the last two years. But yet, but if you look on my Spotify numbers, man, we're getting crushed.
Right.
But it doesn't make sense to me, because is it that, then when people hear it, they're like, oh my gosh, man. So it's a very weird world we live in, because a lot of those people who have all these, whether it's Instagram followers or verified Spotify listeners, a lot of them are not playing music for a living.
Really?
But yet there's guys out there that are, there's guys out there, you know, that are doing it full time that, you know, it, like you said, it's very strange. Is it somebody that you know, or how does that work? I mean, it's all manipulation to an extent, but.
Yeah, just that. There used to be like a blueprint of how to do things. And like now it's just kind of like it could hit at any moment and you're not living in the same world that you were living in the day before. You know what I mean? It's just a weird kind of way of making it now.
I talked to a songwriter the other day out of Nashville who's very successful, and he listened to a new one we're dropping, probably coming out in February at this point. And he said, man, your voice is different than anything that's out right now. And the twang is the real thing. A lot of people down here in the coast think I'm from here and they think I got a fake accent, but it's not.
Right.
And he said, you can chase whatever is working. Cause that's what the majority of people are trying to do that. You find a video that works and then everybody goes down that route. That's an anything. He said, but especially comes back around, pendulum is going to swing. He said, the best advice I can give you is set a trap and wait on it to come back around.
Right. That makes a lot of sense. Just do what you do and just wait for it to come back.
Yeah. And it obviously from a business standpoint, and again, I don't have a label. I don't have a manager or an agent. I do everything from QuickBooks to booking all the shows, ordering merch, all that. And I do have a full band, and we've got some really great partners and sponsors behind us. But you have to be savvy to what is working and what trends are going on, without sacrificing who you are to the core. Because if I go on TikTok, like this right here, and talk about a country song out of 2024, which I'm going to start doing that just as a joke. But if I start doing that, singing along to my song in my driveway, filming me, like, y'all wouldn't want to have me on podcast. you want to see me killing ducks and hanging out and drinking some Superior Light beer. And I think that right there is, maybe I'm just old school, man, but I think you have to go with the trend to an extent. Stay who you are, and I like that idea too of setting a trap and waiting on
it. Get you a jacked up truck and a backwards hat and, you know, singing in your driveway.
Well, what kills me is it's funny. I guess I should be flattered to an extent, but again, my numbers are not a whole lot, man. But word of mouth is powerful, and I think it's hard to quantify our following just by looking at the industry standard nowadays. But I've tried a good many things to I don't want to say that they're risque or borderline being canceled. But man, bumper stickers. I mean, we're thinking old school. I have a bumper sticker that says there ain't no pussies in the Hall of Fame.
Boy, that's the truth.
I like that.
Yeah, I have a song. Yeah, that's just kind of what we live by, man. It's obviously nothing offensive. We don't mean it that way. We just mean like, man, like ain't nobody else going to do it for you. And we actually put it in a song. It's on Spotify called Finding the Line is the name of the song. But there's a line in the song because I work too hard to tell me I can't because there ain't no pussies in the Hall of Fame. They say it is what it is, but it ain't what it ain't. So, but that's the thing, man. And I'm a big believer in we're just one handshake away. You got to keep your head in the game until that happens. But it's all about networking, man. Yeah. Surround yourself with good, positive, successful people, and it can't fail. Yeah.
I heard something really good the other day. It said, most people don't fail, they just quit.
I believe that completely.
Yeah. Just do the work. Keep your head down. The break will come as long as you keep working. But the moment you quit, it's like investing. My grandfather, Jeff's dad, always used to say, you didn't lose money unless you cash out. When you cash out, that's when, where the stock goes down, you hadn't lost any money until you cash out. So just stay to it.
Absolutely. And you definitely can't be in it if you're not there anymore. So it makes you wonder how many people walk away from it right before.
Yes.
The end
close. I think a lot of people just, like I said, they give up. They just don't. Then all of a sudden you hit. But if you quit, you ain't going to do it. You can't kill them on the couch.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and there aren't no pussies in the Hall of Fame. That's the damn truth for sure. But you got to stick with what you got.
I'll get y'all some bumper stickers. Don't worry. I got t-shirts.
I like that. You know, it's another thing you see is that when you read a biography of a Janis Joplin's biography or anybody like that, that become a big star, the struggles they had to make it and how broke they were. I read a biography about Van Halen one time. I think it was Van Halen. It was one of the old rock bands. I'm pretty sure it was Van Halen. I'm a big Van Halen fan. And they had a break because David Lee Roth's daddy was a very successful surgeon in Hollywood, in California. So he was a rich kid. But Eddie and Alex were not rich kids, and Michael Anthony wasn't. But they had at least enough backing that they could get going. But it took a lot of breaks for them to get to where they didn't have shit. Motley Crue's the same way. But if they would have quit just because it got tough, we'd never know who they were. You know, sometimes you got to give up some stuff to get ahead in life. Most everybody does. You have to have sacrifices. And people lose sight of that.
Sure. And I think there's... Right.
And they lose sight of that. Everywhere you are, people lose sight of, you know, when you see someone successful, you only see the end result. You don't see all the work it took to get into it. I don't know much about Elon.
So,
go ahead.
Social media has really kind of, I guess, reinforced that perception as well from the general public. Because all you see is, if you take our profile, for example, man, all you get to do, man, you got it made. It must be nice, hunt fish, do whatever. But you're right, man. I mean, it's, and I think that probably on the flip side of that, because of social media and the way things can blow up, right? Yeah, it would probably be nice to have a viral video if my bumper stickers go viral and our song takes off, becomes number one, and we get to go duck hunt wherever we want to, but or have our own farm and get to do it there. But at the same time, I think there's a lot to be said about building that solid foundation too. And I think there's even more people in today's world that probably make it really fast. Whether it's people ask me all the time, why don't you go on American Idol or go on The Voice? And quite frankly, that's just not me.
Yeah.
I want to shake hands at every level on the way up. And do I wish sometimes it might be a little bit faster? Yeah, I've been doing it 5.5 years. Laney Wilson was in Nashville for 12.
Yeah.
So I really haven't been doing it that long, but you see success all the time. That's all you see. But I think a lot of people that do make it, well, it's hard enough to make it. It's harder to stay here. And when that starts to come back down, man, I think a lot of them just aren't prepared foundation-wise to take it. And then, boom, flash in the pan, they're gone. But you're right, man, 100%. Maybe I should start documenting the behind the scenes of being a country producer.
The struggle is part of it for everyone, but everybody only sees the end result when you're successful. Laney Wilson's a perfect example. I didn't know she spent 12 years in Nashville. She grinded her ass to get to where she is. And people do not see that. They just see the end result. They don't know that. I don't know her story. Maybe she was a waitress for a little bit. I don't know. Whatever. She could have been homeless.
I don't know her story.
But there, you only hear about it at the end. You don't ever hear that it struggles. We were in Nashville a couple times last year, and I was really – I enjoyed the – I'm not a big live music guy. I like music. I respect it, and I appreciate it. But when you go to every one of those clubs and you see those bands up there playing, and they got a tip jar up there, most of those guys are never, ever going to have much more than what's in that tip bucket. It's just the bottom line to the whole deal. 99% of them will never, ever make it. But there's a Lainey Wilson out there. I guess Rascal Flatts was a street band there, and they made it. And I'm sure there's a lot more that have that we know about, but you got to get the break. But some of them guys will never get the break. They'll be 65 years old. I met a guy. We did street interviews for our show with Boss we got coming out this spring. And I talked to a guy, and he was 60-something years old. And I think he told me he sold insurance. He has a regular job now, but he's been doing that for 40 years. And I told him, I said, you waiting to get a break? He said, I'm never going to get a break. He said, I just enjoy doing it now. But he said, the first 15 years I did it, that's all it was about, was me trying to get that break. He said, I think I'm good enough. But he goes, so is 90% of the people on these bars right here are good enough. You just got to get the right guy to hear you.
Mm-hmm.
Kevin Hart's a really good story. If you ever read his biography about him,
don't even get me started on Kevin Hart.
You don't like Kevin
Hart? Have you not heard the Cat Williams bit yet?
About him being a plant.
He said,
if you read his book, though, he went through some struggles to become a plant.
But he said, there's not any documented shows where Kevin Hart sold out in L.A. Never. And it said, even in his biography, he's cutting his teeth on the East Coast.
Yes.
So how all of a sudden is his very first movie a starring role in Soul Plane to where he's the number one actor?
I don't know.
He said he's a plant.
You don't think he's funny?
He was propped up.
Well, they did a lot of props because he's about 5'2". Do you not think he's funny, though?
I don't know if he writes his own material. I don't know.
Have you heard the Cat Williams stuff that's going around?
I have, yeah. As soon as you mentioned that, I was like, oh, wait, because it was Shannon Sharp, right?
It is fascinating. I don't know how much of it's true.
Why would he lie?
And Kevin Hart responded because somebody asked him about it.
What'd he say?
He said, what do you do when you go to the circus? Do you watch it or do you participate in it?
So that was Kevin Hart's answer.
Yeah. He said, you watch. You're like, oh, look at that lion riding that bicycle. Said you don't participate, you don't get involved with the circus, you just watch it.
Do you think Kevin Hart is funny?
His material is funny, yes.
Okay, I do too.
I enjoy him.
I don't know
that Cat Williams.
But why would Cat Williams lie
about any of it?
There is no reason to. Joe Rogan defended Cat Williams.
Oh, did he?
Well, I don't know if he defended him. He said, "Hey, we'd love to have him on our show. We'd love to have him on." He goes, "I'm a big fan of his," and he just talked about being a fan of his a week or two before that.
Right.
But he ripped on Joe Rogan about having inferior comedians on there. You didn't know that part?
I didn't know that
part. Oh, yeah, he called out Joe Rogan's show.
I thought he called out Shannon Sharpe's show for having Cedric the Entertainer, Steve Harvey, and all those guys.
No, he talked about Joe Rogan.
Oh, I didn't know
that. He specifically said Joe Rogan's show.
Oh.
I didn't listen to it all. I like Cat Williams. I think he's a funny little fucker also. Him and Kevin Hart ought to have a fight for charity. That'd be funny. Be like a midget fight.
He said, whenever I walk in anywhere and Kevin Hart's already there, Kevin Hart goes out the back door because he knows the truth.
Well, I like
he said,
that.
So does everybody else that I'm naming here. Nobody wants to confront me because they all know I'm right.
If I had to pick one of them to go to, I'd go see Cat Williams over Kevin Hart.
Yeah.
I think Cat Williams is funnier.
He ripped on everybody in that. I've only seen the clips. I've not listened to the entire episode, and I won't because the clips were enough to me. But I had the next day off, so we're in the middle of hunting season here, and I'm up at 3:15 every day. I was off the next day, and my family was out of town. I had rented Oppenheimer that night. I paused Oppenheimer to just scroll through TikTok to see the next Cat Williams video. I loved it.
So anyways, I don't even know how we got into Cat Williams, but anyway. Oh,
you were talking
about
Kevin Hart.
Kevin Hart, I read his autobiography, and he struggled. He had to use his mother-in-law's American Express to pay his bills to get around everywhere. He said the first vehicle, and this is strictly off memory, and I'm sure I'm off on this because I get fact checked on every freaking thing, but he bought a vehicle at 28% interest.
Ooh.
because he couldn't get nobody's credit was so bad, and he'd already had a movie. He's already been in Soul Plane. Yeah. So he bought him a Cadillac Escalade Tahoe at 28% interest, and he said, I drove that bitch to the barbershop in L.A. where everybody went that's famous to get a $100 haircut. And he said, I didn't have no fucking money at all.
Yeah.
Now he's got Capital One commercials. He's rolling in it.
You know, like Cat Williams said, I have produced every Netflix special that I've ever done. He said, I produced my first one. He said it cost $25,000. It cost $22,000. I had $25 to my name. But he said, how are you going to get anybody else to believe in what you have going on if you're not willing to take that initiative and back your own self? If you're not willing to bet on yourself, how are you going to get a big corporation to bet on you? So you're not going to.
I think that's a good valid point.
Well, see, maybe I'm not well versed in the comedian side of things, but in music, man, that's pretty standard.
Back yourself, at least
from what I've noticed. And again, I'm not in Nashville on purpose. I'm not based out of there. We the song that we're dropping coming out, we recorded in Nashville because I wrote it with the producer that's doing it. And I go there and hang out, do the writer's rounds because I know that the business is there. But we opened up for Aaron Tippin, who was an awesome guy, by the way. Opened up for Aaron Tippin in fall of 2018. And his tour manager at the time actually used to manage Metallica on the road. Pretty cool, yeah. But he said, he was a cool guy. Like, I walk on stage, he's like, hey, man, don't fuck this up. So came off stage, and it was a sold-out thing for Veterans Day. It was a great show. And he said, Bean, he's like, it ain't half bad, man. He said, just keep doing what you do. And so I sat backstage with that guy, and he was telling me that when he was not on the road with Aaron Tippin, and I don't know how much weight this holds. Again, this was a backstage conversation in the middle of a show. But he said that he worked for an artist development agency in Nashville, and that if you did not come to the table with $250,000 in your budget, they didn't even look at you.
Wow.
I can believe that.
Yeah, I mean, and I thought that was a lot back then. I've learned a whole lot in 5 years about what it takes to do any of this stuff. But you think about a record budget in there, and to do it to the utmost level with the A-list musicians and all that, and then on top of that, man, video I think consumes probably more budget than anything. But there are a ton of people, man. I honestly still just don't think, I don't buy it at this point that a video goes viral organically. It may seem like that, but I think that somebody has the phone number to make the call to flip.
You know, historically, if you go back into the record business, there's a guy that had a couple of big hits, and it's Tommy something. I can't remember his last name. I'm pretty sure it's Tommy. But he sang back in the 60s. He was a rock and roll guy. Well, he sold his soul to the Gambino crime family, or one of them crime families. They owned a record company. And I'm sure Tommy's wrong, and I'm sure it's not the Gambinos, but suggested the story. And what they did was they owned radio stations all over. So they would only play his music, and he would go to number one. Well, he got the big head and thought, hey, this is me, not them deals. Well, the mob said, no. It's us. We're making you who you are, and this is what you're going to do. And I've got a book at home, and I need to look it up and get the names on it. But it was a guy who was famous. Tommy and the Shandells, I think, is who it was. But he had a couple of big hits. He was a good musician, but there's thousands of good musicians, and he was a good singer. But his deal was the mob owned the record station, the radio stations, and they controlled the playlist they had, and they made him number one. And I've heard other people talk about that too.
That's what Kat said.
Yeah, I mean, that's how you do it. I don't know much about the music industry at all, other than we've had some artists on here. I've known a couple of guys that sing, some kind of stars, kind of not stars. And it's a hard business. When you go to Nashville and you go to any town, Austin, Texas, that's got live music, there's thousands and thousands of guys cutting their teeth. I know less about the comedian world, other than I did do some stand-up comedy, and I went to a place three or four times in a row, an amateur night, and did it. And there's a group of those guys there, and I'm telling you, half of them suck. They're not even very funny. One or two guys is really pretty damn funny. But that's a terrible way to try to make a living. They don't pay nothing, because they asked me to go with them. And they said, hey, we're going to go to Houston, Austin, blah, blah, blah. I go, what's it pay? I wasn't even interested in doing it, but I was curious what the pay was. He goes, man, you make $200 a night. So I'm going to drive to Houston, Texas, and I'm going to get me a hotel room, and they're going to pay me $200 a freaking night. So I'm going to lose about $100 a day trying to do this thing. It's not worth it. I mean, there's no venue. At least country music artists got a way of making some money playing gigs at nighttime, you know. But a comedian only has to have a microphone. He don't need shit else. But it's a tough gig. So for Kevin Hart to be that lucky one that made it, that's pretty amazing.
Plant.
Well, there could be some truth to that. I don't think Jerry Seinfeld's very funny either, and he's made billions of fucking dollars. His TV show is excellent. But his stand-up, I do not find Jerry Seinfeld very funny. Do you?
Some of his stuff is pretty good.
See, I think he's rather boring. Dave Chappelle, on the other hand, is great.
What's Matt? Hey, I love Chappelle. Have you seen it? What's Matt Rife's backstory? Didn't that guy blow up on TikTok? Wasn't he like the first comedic TikToker?
Yeah, I think so. He got canceled.
Now he's canceled?
Yeah, he's canceled. I think he made a... I want to say it was a rape joke. Don't hold me. Don't hold my feet to the fire. Yeah,
that's not real good. That's not a good thing to deal with.
I think it was something really, really risque, and he went all in on it, and it backfired, and now, yeah, he's canceled.
So I wondered, because I hadn't seen his stuff. Some of his shit's pretty funny. But we, you know what, though? You go back to any old comedian. You watch any Johnny Carson from the 70s when he had Buddy Hackett on or Don Rickles. Them guys couldn't make it today.
Right.
There's no way. I watched a Saturday Night Live clip the other day that had George Wendt, who plays George on Cheers, was on there, and somebody else was on there, and they were dressed up like Bear fans. They had the Bear fan, the hat.
Yeah.
And it had to be from the mid-80s, and they were talking about playing the Super Bowl in San Francisco, and they go, well, who will be excited about that? He goes, the Queers,
right,
instead of the Bears, and they talk about this on Saturday Night Live. Shit, they'd throw you off TV today for that.
Yeah, quickly.
It's hard to be a politically correct comedian.
Oh, 100%, because you're always towing that line. You're always saying what other people are thinking.
See, Dave Chappelle's too big to get canceled.
Have you seen his new special, Andrew?
I hadn't, but I thought even he got canceled.
He did for a while.
He's too big for that.
His new special on Netflix is really, really funny. Really funny, I thought.
Who was it he was making fun of? I saw some clips from it, and he was ripping on somebody's ass.
He makes fun of a lot of people. I don't know. You got to narrow it down. Makes fun of Will Smith and Chris Rock. There's a lot of good stuff.
I like when he makes fun of Chinese people and his wife's Chinese.
Yeah. That's what he said. He said he went through his wife's phone, and he's like, fucking trying on that password. And he's like, and then I remembered it had Face ID, so I just went like this. And that motherfucker opened up, and he said, I thought she was cheating on me. He said, who's this motherfucker named Earl in here? She said, oh, that's my gay hairdresser. She said, if you're going to wake me up in the middle of the night, motherfucker. She said, who's all these bitches in your phone? He said, how'd you open that, motherfucker? She said, I just went like this. Squished my nose down and pooched my lips out. She said, then it opened up for yours. So, you know, you just make fun
sense
of everything.
Humor. You should. Right. That's what, life's too short for that shit.
So.
Larry the Cable Guy was one of the best comedians of all time, I think. I know the rednecks, people that ain't rednecks don't understand him. I got him. I understood him. I thought he was funny. I liked him a lot more than I did Jeff Foxworthy. But Jeff Foxworthy, I got to say this much, and both of those guys, Jeff Foxworthy made tons of money, and he never, ever talked about sex, really, or cussed on stage.
Foxworthy? Yeah.
Yep. But he hit.
He was almost like family-friendly, yeah. Relatable.
Yes. And a very good, and I'm not a huge fan of his. I saw him in concert years ago, and I thought he was funny. But I just not a big, you're a redneck. But he talked about common sense shit that everybody talks about, and they liked him, but he didn't cuss, and he never had to talk about sex, and was very, very, very successful.
Mm-hmm.
And he's lasted a long time. Eddie Murphy's made big movies, but Eddie Murphy's not very funny anymore. His movies are terrible.
Beverly Hills Cop's coming out soon.
A new one?
Yeah.
Oh, geez, that'll be terrible. I'm embarrassed for him already.
It's going to be exclusively on Netflix. I'll watch it just because I love the first two. Did they do three?
They've got like seven of them. I think there's almost as many as them as there is Friday the 13th.
I'll watch it just to say I did. But
and I'm not a big fan of Coming to America 2 is so disappointing because Coming to America was great, but the second one was terrible. You can't do shit like that over and over again.
Mm-mm.
So where are you in concert? What's your next steps?
So this coming weekend, I'm going to Augusta, Georgia. I've got a bunch of private parties for January. And then the next big show we have, I'm not sure if you're familiar with the Southeastern Wildlife Expo.
Yeah.
Charleston, South Carolina.
Or something like that.
It's the same weekend as Ducks, yes. Or from Turkey. Turkey Convention. We'll be there with Boss.
Turkey. Yeah. I hate that, man, because I want to go play NWTF as well. I had to make a call last year And I end up sticking with seaweed. I'll be there again this year for 2 days there at Brittle Bank Park. And man, that's just a great time. Talk about networking possibilities there and just some really good people between Turtle Boxes out there, Williams Knife Company. So I'm not sure if you're familiar with
Williams Knife. We've had Chris on.
And obviously everybody at Turtle Box. Really? Okay, cool. Yeah. And see, I didn't realize that he actually grew up with my old lieutenant from DNR.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So small world stuff. Chris is from Johns Island, if I'm not mistaken on that. So I'm trying to get some shows in Birmingham coming up for this year so we can do. After this today, I'm working on my online store. I got to get up and running so I can sell the Ain't No Pussies in the Hall of Fame t-shirts and bumper stickers. But we're also doing turkey calls, and I'm going to be working with Williams Knife Company to get some of his flippers with my logo on them because a lot of people have been requesting those at shows. So seaweed is the next, probably, I would say, big thing. We have a potential opener coming up. I can't say who in that week, but that's the next big stop there. And I'm slated right now. And man, you might see me in a backyard to a big stage whipping up for Randy Houser recently. You never know, man. If you book it, I will play it. And right now I'm slated to be in Texas around the Houston area. Looks like the third week of April. So trying to find some shows around there. I think I've got it blocked off in the calendar right now to shoot a bass fishing show. So we'll be looking for some shows to play around there.
You talk about a music lover. Chris is a huge, huge music lover. We get him on just talking about music and old school music because him and Jeff kind of have some of the same genres that they enjoy. But Chris is a big time music lover. Great guy.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we hit it off when we met, and it was just kind of crazy that we had not met before, but you know, six degrees of knowing everybody there. So
yeah, 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon. So tell me about your writing process. How does that work for you? Do you have kind of the riff already in place, or do you have like the chorus or the, you know, something that you can kind of go off of, or is it just, let me just sit down and kind of fiddle on this guitar until something comes to me?
Very rarely do I do that. It's usually a hook that I have that I will write down and I've got a list of them in about 3 or 4 notepads sitting right here at my fingertips. And then I'll have a melody. A lot of times it comes to me either in the shower or right as I'm waking up.
Right.
And I don't write like the typical Nashville person where they write them every day in a room somewhere and their songs will be written all over the place. For mine, I write it when I have the inspiration.
Right.
And a lot of times if I can't, I'll work on it. If I can't finish it, I'll walk away from it because I haven't lived the song yet or I don't have the right writer on it. But generally, my style is I will have a melody, and then usually it starts with a hook before that. So, like, I've got a song right now that I haven't finished called Double First Cousin Schweitzer Moon. And if that is not a country hit song, I don't know what is. But I had that hook. I've got it halfway written. I had the hook, and then the melody hit me, and then I actually wrote that without a guitar in my hand. But the one that we are dropping this February is called Country Songs. The only song I've written in Nashville. And the way that happens, my fiance and I got adopted by a little Walker hound dog that some deer hunters let loose last January. So a year ago. And there was a bunch of them. She's the only one that stayed around. And she is not the lab that I thought we were going to have that was in our plans. But she's a cool little dog. She tracks deer for me. And her name is Daisy May. And probably about a month after we got her, I was in the mountains with some friends of mine and drinking a cup of coffee. And I said, dang, I got a good dog, a great woman. Sounds like a country song. Mm-hmm. And I was listening to some Don Williams a lot at that time. And I was listening to Don Williams all the time. But for whatever reason, that's the album that I had queued on my Spotify. And I was thinking kind of old school country and started messing with it. Didn't really come up with a whole lot. Had that idea in my notepad. When I went to Nashville in June, I played golf with a buddy of mine named Justin Addis. He said, man, let's go write at Michael Funk's house, and I brought that idea to the table, and he said, man, that sounds pretty good. So as cliche as it may sound, Country Song is the one coming out. I can send you all a preview of it.
Yeah, I'd love to.
When we get done here. And that's an example, though, right there. I had an idea.
Mm-hmm.
And 2 months later, I came up with the melody, and then thankfully I didn't write it when I did because those two guys brought a whole different aspect to that song.
So how do these writer meetings work? Like, you know, you said you're in a room and there, what's there, three of you?
That one was three. And that was literally just a phone call, man.
And is everybody just kind of throwing ideas at you?
So that particular song, we had obviously the concept of it from what I just told y'all about, but I had a verse concept. I had absolutely no idea about what the chorus was going to be. And Justin was sitting there on the couch. And ironically enough, Justin and I both went to high school in Anderson, South Carolina. He's been in Nashville for a long time. The first gig I ever played in Nashville was at the Listening Room, and they'd reached out to me to book, and I ended up getting put on stage with him. So what are the odds of that?
Right.
But this was probably a year and a half later, this past summer. He's sitting on the couch with the sunglasses on, and he might have been a couple beverages deep, and he hadn't said a whole lot for a while. And he goes, "Little bit of a whole lot of nothing ain't never been bad, ain't never been hurt before." And I was like, "What did you just say?" And he repeated it, but he did it with the melody of the song. And I was like, "All right." And I said something. I was like, "Man, we need a one-liner before we go to the hook." I said something like, "Truck still cranking." And the producer turns around the console and goes, "Speaker still hanking." And Justin goes, "Waking up at a crack of dawn." And he took his sunglasses off and he set up and he goes, "That sounds to me like a country song." That's how the song was written. So as cliche as it probably sounds like we're talking about right now, it actually turned out, I think, pretty well. And it's a little bit different song in the sense that I'm playing all the guitars on the track. Mm-hmm. So it sounds different. I mean, we've got tons of songs out there nobody knows about right now.
Yeah.
So we dropped a full-length album in 21 called Selma by Sundown. It's on every platform, Spotify, Apple Music, whatever you listen to. And then we've got one called Low Country. It's an EP. And we just dropped, I know you said you prefer acoustic sessions. We just dropped one called the Salt Creek Sessions. And there's actually videos to go with that on
YouTube. That'll be great. Yeah, that'll be really good.
Yeah, so they're out.
See,
right now.
I don't, I understand getting stuck and needing help, but I don't know. Like the other day, we had a little video, like a once in a lifetime kind of, the camera caught us. We shot a duck out of the sky. And it falls down into the hands of a hunter. And like, we kind of, you know, there were four of us working on getting the video chopped up. And then it's like, fuck, now I need a caption for this. Something punchy. You know, you want it to be punchy, but you don't want it to be over punchy. You want it to be a little bit cliche, but not too cliche. And like, there were four or five of us and everybody was spitting out ideas. And like, it's easy for me to kind of get swayed one way or another, but like at the end of the day, it's me that has to come up with what it's going to be. You know what I mean? So it's hard when there's too many voices in the room for me personally, if that makes sense.
Well, it's gotta be. And I would say to your point, writing a song is different too, because you have to have the right group to write that particular song. And obviously everybody got their own gifts. So if us three are going to write a song about duck hunting, I'm sure that would come together great. But if we're going to write a song about golf, it may not.
Right.
But you know, and that one just kind of, I can't explain to you how it happened. It just did. That was right place at the right time. But I write a lot of my songs solo, but I will say it's much easier for me to write with somebody else, but the right person. I write with my producer and guitar player, Joe Taylor, a lot, just because our brains just seem to click. And I talk a lot. And he's very good at taking a long phrase and condensing it. Because you go look back and look at a Merle Haggard lyric. Man, that guy says more with less than anybody else, I think, I've ever listened to. And you don't realize it. Just go look at his lyrics, like Silver Wings, man, or any of those songs are like that long.
Yeah. Right.
But they're bangers, you know? So,
it's just
different strokes, man.
Yeah, and you know, like you said though, like you got to have the right group together to come up with the right song. They got to have the right backstory. They got to have the right experiences to help propel that song forward.
Now keep in mind, I don't have any number ones yet, but
people don't fail; they just quit.
It's coming. Exactly. You got to hang in there. So we're developing our catalog songs, on.
Yeah. I mean, did you, you know, looking back, obviously you had this dream. Did you think that you would ever be where you are now?
I didn't think I'd ever be in Georgetown. That's for sure.
Really?
I don't know what I thought exactly, other than COVID threw everybody for a loop and caught us right when we started. So one thing I know is that I chose the hard route. I knew that I was moving to Nashville, decided to change plans, and I met my producer and guitar player and do our own thing because that's how I wanted to do it anyway. And stick to our roots of who we are and what real country gets thrown around a lot. And let's not go down that rabbit hole, but the music I want to write, play, and sing. So I stuck to that, and man, it was working. We were packing out every venue down here, even though nobody knew who we were at all in Texas at that point in time. We had everybody in the Lowcountry did, and COVID hit right as we were getting to those ticket sale events. So we, like, in like a year and a half, we went from playing some rinky-dink bar with 10 people in it to all of a sudden playing a couple festivals and everything that were ticket sale events. And that right there gets you in front of the right people, and you got to capitalize on that momentum. Well, just because COVID hits and I lost everything, and one thing I did not do was pivot and do all the social media live stream stuff. I did two, and I'll be honest with you. The first Facebook live stream that I did playing, halfway through the first song, I was like, dude, if I have to do this, I'll go back to being a game warden. Because I don't play guitar. I don't play guitar to watch myself on the computer screen. Right. And everybody's gotten used to it now because that's how we do a lot of things. But at that time, I was like, man, I'm just going to wait on this stuff to blow over because surely the American people are stronger than this. And hopefully my fan base is. Well, it didn't blow over.
It was not 2 weeks to flatten the curve.
No, not at all. So back to the original point was a lot of our fan base got married and had kids during that time. But life doesn't stop. Just because everybody pivots and business changes, life doesn't stop. So when things started coming back, our momentum was gone in the way of ticket sales. People wanted to come to shows. They got a newborn at the house, man. They can't do that. So that put a huge hitch in our giddy up. But looking back on it, man, I was nowhere near as developed as an artist, a songwriter, or the business was not really ready for maybe what was to come. Who knows? Everything has for a reason. But I still think that we can do it our own way by brute force and ignorance, man. But obviously, I say that as a joke, but I do have a pretty good plan, and I think we can do it our own way.
That's
to basically take it to the top.
That's how this podcast has worked. Just fucking volume, baby. Volume and ignorance and
brute force,
brute force ignorance. I like that. Brute force ignorance.
Yep.
With a sledgehammer.
Yes, absolutely. Hey.
Playing private parties is really the way to go, isn't it?
100%. That is how I've gotten. I would say any sponsors we have has all come from private gigs. I play the bars to honestly shake hands to get more private shows. And to, I love a rowdy honky tonk show. Don't get me wrong. But corporate events are great. And then usually from those private scenes is where you get to talk to meet the right person who has the in on the bigger stages, or they know the person that does. And we've been on the bigger stages. The problem that we have is that we are not in Nashville. So I understand that to an extent, but the goal would be to get attached as an opener for a bigger act on more than one big show. So if we could do a couple runs like that, man, my way of communicating is shaking hands, drinking beer. So that would really help our cause on that. But yes, absolutely, man. Private shows, and I will travel from here to Texas any point in time for that. Whether it's a duck club or a birthday party, rehearsal dinner, man, we've done it all.
Can you tell people what the rate is on that?
I don't know if I want to announce it on this just because, the musicians, it's all over the board. And I feel like a lot of people in South Carolina already get upset that, I mean, I might live local, but I'm not a local musician here. And the rates definitely vary with somebody who's doing it on the side or for fun versus somebody who's doing it for a living.
Right.
But I will say, if somebody's interested in doing that, I also have another bumper sticker that says I'm cheaper than you think. So, I'll send y'all a care package out that way.
Perfect.
But anybody who's interested in booking, go to booking@beamcountry.com. Send an email there. So that's booking@beamcountry.com. Our Instagram is Beam Country, Beam like the whiskey, country like the music. But no, it's definitely cheaper than you think, man. I do a lot of solo shows. I'm fortunate that I can play guitar and sing. A lot of people have to have a lead guitar accompaniment or a full band. We do have a full band. I do duo shows. We pretty much have a show to meet anybody's needs.
I know that we...
And I, and The flip side, man, is that we can't get booked at some bars because we're too expensive, but yeah, we can't get booked on some big stages because we're too cheap.
Oh, yeah.
So somebody's like, I figured y'all were, you know, 10 grand. And I'm like, man, we're not there yet. One song away and we'll be more than that. But that's,
We did a music deal here one time. We had Randy Rogers come to Knox City and play in a band, and I was the mayor then, and we put all that together and we did it through our EDC. And it was funny because when we initially booked it, I think it was $25,000 or $30,000 to get him to play for the night. So we booked that, and then you find out he only wants to play if he's got a certain kind of stage to be on. So then you're having to pay $5,000 to $10,000 to get this certified stage in there, and then you got to pay people to put it together and stuff. There was a whole lot more went into it than just a band. Well, if I was putting on a private party, I don't want to have to go pay $5,000 or $10,000 for a stage. So is that common with you guys, or do you just pay if it's just you? Do you just, if you play on the back of a flatbed trailer, are you okay with that?
Man, flatbed trailer is my best friend. here locally, I say locally, within driving distance, and I don't mind driving to Texas as long as I can route those shows on the way. I run a lot of my sound, especially on a solo show. If we're running a full band sound, I've got all the equipment to do so. We usually hire a sound guy, or some of our sound guys have their own equipment, but it's not as, we are nowhere near what you just mentioned on that, which I get, my profile's not as big as Randy Rogers either. But no, man, I tell people if there's one outlet, I'm good to go. Now, I flew to Texas last April to play, and the biggest thing I ran into there was I can't fly with all my sound. So a lot of the venues have a PA system or sound, and you can usually find somebody who's got it there locally. So, man, I try to be a low-maintenance guitar player as much as I can be because I want to make a living. I want y'all to have a good time, and ultimately that's what's going to get us to the next level. But when it comes to, like, a festival or, like, I had somebody the other day book us for a festival in September, and you're talking thousands of people at that. They wanted us to run our own sound, and I said, y'all have to have a big stage and sound for that, only because we're going to look like a bunch of jerks out there if I run the sound and it doesn't sound good or it's feeding back, because I'm not a sound guy, and I can't do it while I'm playing. So I can see it if it's a big event, and that's usually an image type thing and a quality type thing,
right?
But not on a private party.
Right.
I know that the band cost more money than I thought it was going to be. Then it cost a ton for the stage, and we had to pay money for a sound guy to come in. But what impressed me the most was the guy that opened for Randy, something in the Sons of the Pioneers, was a he's had a couple of big hits. He showed up in a freaking minivan. Yeah. Got out and had his guitar and a couple of guys with him, and he opened up for Randy, and he was really good, and he'd had a couple of big hits. And I can't remember the damn – Sons of the Pioneers, I think, was the name of the guy. It was the name of his band. He was a really famous guy. It was a pretty interesting deal, but that's a hard road, but you got to stick with it.
We try to be low maintenance. I want to look professional, and I want everybody. I mean, generally now, I'm either getting hung, like I said, hung up on by places I'm trying to get into just to plan a seat. Because most of the time we play somewhere, they're like, man, and I don't mean this out of any kind of arrogance or haughtiness, but usually we'll play a smaller venue. They're like, dude, why are you playing here?
Right.
But I'm like, man, I don't have a choice. You're the only one that would call me back, yeah. Which is great. But we're at the point now, a lot of people are like, dude, you need to at least double your rate, which would be great. But again, man, wishing everybody tuning in to Spotify or Apple Music and streaming all that. Get the streams up, and that's usually what happens from there.
So what's it like whenever you're about to go on stage and the guy's like, hey, don't fuck this up? Are you already nervous? And then he says that, and you're like, oh, great, yeah, don't fuck this up. That's the last thing. That's great as I'm walking out.
Nah, man, I thrive off that. I thought it was hysterical. I probably needed it. I mean, at that point, because that was so fresh into just jumping headfirst into this, not knowing what the heck I was really doing, not that I do today. But people ask me, do you get nervous when you go on stage? I love it. That's what I live for, especially big crowd, sold out crowd like that. I thought it was great because that's ultimately what ended up being kind of a segue to me being able to hang out with that guy and talk to him, because he told me afterwards, he said, man, I thought you were, you know, slick back hair, one of these Nashville pop country guys and this and that. And so, no, man, I thrived off that. And I thought that was hysterical. That's the best thing he could have said in the moment.
Really? That's good though. I mean, it's good that the moment doesn't get to you, you know?
Yeah. I mean, obviously you're going to have a little bit of excitement, yeah. I guess would be the way you channel the nerve. Like, man, when we opened up for Randy Houser, at Beaufort Water Festival this year. It was like 4,500 people, man. There was a storm delay. So the fact they got delayed an hour, everybody that usually wouldn't be there for an opener was there, and they were ready to party. So, and I want to do that three nights a week. You know, that level of playing and, man, merch sales, everything once you get there elevates. But instead of the next week, you know, out there burning up the road and getting told to turn down in some bars. So, but we play it loud and proud, man.
That's all you can do. So you give your website out one more time if somebody wants to book you, and then we'll start wrapping her up here.
That's cool. So the booking email is booking@beancountry.com. The website is beancountry.com. Instagram's @beancountry. So to explain that name, we built a brand in reverse, again, by complete accident, like everything else. When I started doing this, everybody calls me Bean, just to let you know. So like my close friends, most people that know my first name end up always calling me Bean. Some people don't even know my first name outside of the music thing. But I was going to go by just Bean. So we did that. Well, when we dropped our first single, the distribution screwed up and put it under a rapper named Bean.
Oh, no.
Didn't know there was a rapper named Beam. He's big, man. He's got a cut with Beyonce. And so my music was put into an underground rap algorithm for a while. And so because since he has so many followers that clicked on my song, that's why I did that. And we're not big enough to make a phone call to the folks up there at Spotify, especially back then. But unfortunately, they didn't stream my twangy self for at least 30 seconds. So I didn't record a spin there. So we ended up changing it, because people around here were like, man, that's Bean Country. What's up, Bean Country? Because that was my Instagram. Instead of being Bean Music, it was Bean Country. So I said, man, my fiance was like, are people calling you that now? And I was like, well, that's kind of stupid, but I mean, hey, you know what? It might work. Bean like the whiskey, country like the music. So we went with that, and it worked out great for people who saw the shows and got it. People who didn't have a clue who we were like, man, is this guy serious? Or is this a band like Andrew Bean of Bean Country? So we changed. I decided when we went to drop the first album, Selma by Sundown, I was like, let's just do the obvious and just go by my name, Bean. We changed it, and the next week, COVID hit.
Oh.
So we are still trying to get word out to people who followed us from the start, because a lot of my following doesn't have Instagram or Spotify. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, we press CDs. We're old school in a lot of ways. But I still battle that in the Charleston area. It's like, man, so anyway, it's Andrew Beam on all platforms. And, but Beam Country is the brand. That's kind of the fan base nation, man. A lot of the merch is branded Beam Country. But I'm Andrew Beam. Music can be found on platforms, and I'd love to come out there to Texas and everywhere in between, man. If there's a duck camp that needs playing, or a big stage that needs some real country music on, man, we will be there.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, I really wish we were coming out to see you. I'd love to shake your hand and have a beer with you. We're going to be at Turkey, unfortunately. Or not unfortunately, but just can't meet up this time. But maybe our paths will cross some other place and some other time. And it'd be good to have a beer and listen to you jam out. And we wish you all the best. Keep doing what you're doing. Keep your nose to the grindstone, and the break will come.
Absolutely, man. I appreciate y'all having me on. Ain't no pussy.
Absolutely. And let us know when your new song drops and all that other good stuff, and we'll do what we can to spread the word.
I will.
Thank you. God bless you. Be safe and have a great, great 2024.
Y'all do the same. Happy New Year.
Bye.
Bye. Andrew Beam.
BEAM.
Like Beam the Whiskey.
Yep. I tried to get on Siri today, and I tried to ask her for the local ice place to get their phone number.
Yeah.
She did not quite understand my accent.
Ah.
I finally just quit jacking with it and had to look it up.
Yeah.
Anyways, if you're going to be in Nashville, February 14th through 18th, come by and see us at the Turkey Convention.
I'm so excited. I didn't get to go last year. I got to hear secondhand from you how great it was. I am really looking forward to going out there.
Amazing venue. And it is crazy how many fucking people turkey hunt. I mean, there are... Come by and get some Boss Tom. Come by and see me and Andy. We will be in the Boss booth.
I'm so excited. I can't tell you.
Are we going to have some Hattie B's hot chicken?
I was so bummed. Number one, that I missed it. And then number two, whenever you came back and you were talking about just how phenomenal it was.
It was an amazing place. It is not just a turkey show. It is a waterfowl show.
Yeah, yeah. Just a big show.
It is a big time. Lots
big
of good people.
Big end of the year, like, get together.
So are you going to have this hot chicken again? Or are we out on that?
I'm out on that. I would like to have regular chicken. I would like to have something that does not injure me.
Can we go eat at the motel again?
Fuck no.
I like their food. God.
Red Eye Gravy? No.
No, the Red Eye Gravy was terrible.
It's the dumbest.
It's a cool place. It's a cool place.
I don't understand why anybody would travel to such great lengths for breakfast.
It was 5 miles out of the way.
For breakfast. It took us an hour to get there, Jeff.
No, it did not. It
took us forever to get there.
That's because I thought it was great. Loveless Cafe. Great place.
I don't get it.
I'm not big on the Red Eye Gravy.
I don't get it. I don't understand it. It's breakfast.
Well, I thought it was good.
I just had breakfast that was as good at my house.
No, you did
that
not.
I pulled out of the refrigerator that I cooked bacon and sausage a week ago. And I pulled it out of the fridge, microwaved it. It was just as good as what I had at Loveless.
You're
no
wrong.
Disrespect.
It's very good. I thought it was very good. Anyways, come by Nashville and see us at the Turkey Fest or Turkey Convention at the Boss Booth. We look forward to seeing you. A lot of great sponsors will be there, good people there. It is a cool place. If you've never, ever been, you need to go because I think this is the last year it's in Nashville.
Yeah, I think next year it's in Vegas.
Which
I believe.
Stupid. Don't understand that. Turkey hunting is a Southeast thing. I don't know how many turkeys you even shoot in Nevada. And Nevada is very overpriced. Anyways, Nashville's a great time. Come by and see us. Look forward to it. Thank you. God bless y'all. Have a great week. Stay warm. It's going to be a really cold week. Bye.
Really cold 3 days. Love you. Bye. Watch for deer. Go check out our sponsors. Go check out Hemp Hill Farm. BHP will save you some money for CBD. I've got Lou on it right now. They have a pet blend. Alf Outdoor Specialty, Stanfield Outfitters, Mossberg, MLR Graphics, Double T British Kennels, Ducks Unlimited, Lucky Duck, Looking Glass Podcast, Shin Gear, Dirty Duck Coffee, Pacific Calls, BHP 25, Dive Bomb Industries, and Boss Shot Shells.